Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
So, peeps, out of over 116 interviews with guest experts, I've never done this before, but I got so much incredible information from David Garfinkel that I wanted to split this up and give you two pieces of content. So this is going to be part one, and next week we're going to do part two of some incredible information about writing content and how you can boost your business. So sit back, relax, and get ready to learn something.
Hey, peeps. I am uber excited. I actually have one of my favorite authors on the line. His name is David Garfinkel, and he's written a bunch of books and is a wonderful, wonderful copywriter. That's his thing. He focuses and is... David, what was the title of the book that we mentioned? It was Headlines That Make a Difference, or what was that called?
Oh, yeah. It's Advertising Headlines That Make You Rich.
I love that. All right. And my name is not Rich, so it hasn't worked for me yet, but I'm working on it. But anyways, David, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So I so appreciate having you on. And so what I like to do is to get people to know you. I mean, if they haven't heard of you, go to Amazon, look up this book, get this book. It's incredible. And it's one of the first things I did when I started getting into online marketing is I bought David's book. And I have it as a Kindle on my iPad. And I just sat there and just read it and read it and read it. And there's so many great ideas in there. But I really want people to get to know you and your origin story. So what you told me before we got on is, number one, you had a little a motivation before we got on the podcast. What was that?
Oh, that's right. So when I had breakfast this morning to prepare for the podcast, I had some bacon.
That is going to make this sizzling hot, baby. I love it. And then the other thing you told me when we were talking is that you literally came out of the womb writing copy. And I can believe that with a pen in your hand, right? It must have hurt your mom, but I'm sure she got over it. So tell us your story. How did you go from being a little kid writing copy to this legend in the online marketing world?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I wanted to be fed, I would not say, I'd say, well, who else wants some hot, fresh milk, you know? But my mom used to tell a story that I took a long time to talk. I would just sit around and observe and not say anything. But when I started talking, I just wouldn't shut up. And actually, I look at it differently, Brian. I was giving my first seminar. I mean, my first podcast, but I hadn't found the right audience yet. So when I was 8, I was eating my post-sugar snacks, and there was a little contest on the back. And the contest said, oh, Sugar Bear's in trouble. He got caught by the bees trying to rob honey from their hive, and how can he escape? And so I, you know, cut out the coupon in the back after I finished the box of cereal, and I told him how. I said, well, very simple. He simply takes a large bowl, fill it with sugar smacks, put milk in it, put it on the other end of the meadow from where he is, and all the bees will go over there, and they'll leave him alone, because everybody loves sugar smacks. And I won the contest. They sent me a little sugar smack doll. So obviously I've had an inclination for this kind of stuff from way back when. I don't know why. My parents weren't in business. One was a physicist, and one was a social worker, and I'm sure every time I did something like that, it horrified them. God, he's becoming a capitalist. He's going to be a Republican when he grows up, you know? Little did they know, I'm neither Republican or Democrat. Did you know I'm a Zappist?
A Zappist? What's a Zappist?
Well, Frank Zappa said that politics is the entertainment division of the military-industrial complex.
I love it.
I subscribe to that. So I wasn't a copywriter all the way through, though. I was editor of my high school newspaper. Now we were starting to run out of money, and I wrote a letter to all the parents and said, you should subscribe to this by mail so that your kid would have a chance to be in this newspaper and we can stay in business. And we got a lot of mail subscriptions, and that dragged us through the year. But I focused on journalism, and I got a job in journalism right out of school. It was business journalism. Obviously, this business thread runs all through my personal story, my origin story. But that was 10 years. I ended up with a real peachy keen job, the San Francisco bureau chief of McGraw-Hill. But I found the more successful I got, the more I was unhappy. I didn't like, I was good at it. I didn't like the work, just didn't feel good. So I quit, and I padded around trying to figure out what to do. And then I read I was co-teaching with a business partner. We were teaching public speaking, and a friend of his sent him a copy of the Gary Halbert newsletter. And Gary Halbert is sort of like, you know, for most people who are writing copy these days between, say, the ages of 40 and 80, whatever, Gary Halbert was an influence in their lives. He was a big one in mine. The first time I saw this, I read it 20 times. I didn't know what he was doing, but there was something different about this kind of writing from anything I'd ever seen, and I knew I wanted it. I wanted to know what it was. I wanted to know how to do it. And over time, I was doing it, and I was talking about doing it. I remember I was in a screenplay class, a screenwriting class in Marin County, north of San Francisco, where I live, and I would say things like, well, that's really interesting because we use a similar technique to that in copywriting. And the teacher would give me a dirty look, and I'd wait another 20 minutes before I'd say something else like that. But at the end of the class, there were two girls in the class. One was a working journalist, and one was a published author. She'd had some fiction published. But both of them had noticed that I was really happy about copywriting. I was always talking about it. I had a new car. I had a smile on my face. And their lives weren't quite as fulfilling. And they said, David, this copywriting you keep talking about, would you teach it to us? And I thought about it, and I thought about it. And I didn't really have a product yet. And so I said, well, I'll tell you what. If you'll let me professionally record it, including your voices, and then let me sell the recording, I'll be glad to do that. And so they said yes. And that was my first product. And a guy you may have heard of, sort of old school, Mark Joyner. I mean, mm-hmm. He's not old school, but this is way back in the day, like around year 2000. Mark, actually, a friend of mine, Joe Vitale, told me that Mark had just published one of Joe's books, still pretty new at that time. And he said, I bet Mark would be interested in this. And he introduced me, and I'll never forget this. I got this email from Mark. I'm only through, this is way back in the day, cassette number one, and I know I want to publish this, David. And whoa! And then that changed everything. I mean, we must have sold $6,000 worth in the first week. I'd never seen numbers like that before. With my own materials. I mean, I had seen more than that with sales letters I'd written, but not with, you know, selling electrons. And so, you know, when a mutual friend, the guy who introduced us, Mark S.A. Smith, introduced me to J. Conrad Levinson. And the first thing he said about, Mark said, David's a great direct mail copywriter. And Jay said, that's a rare talent. And I love that. Shook hands with him. And he looks me right in the eye and says, would you like to write guerrilla direct mail with me?
Nice.
Yeah, well, that book never happened, but we ended up collaborating on three other books. But people kept asking me over and over to teach them and to coach them. And so in right around the time of 1999, when I recorded the first course with Jane and and the author, I can see your face, I can't remember your name right now, that's when I started developing coaching practice, and it grew, and there was no one else doing it at the time. Today, everyone's a coach, and a lot of people are copywriting coaches, but at the time, there wasn't. And so I kept at it. Around 2009, I realized there might be more opportunities in the part of the world that likes you to have letters after your name, you know, if I got some more education. So I got a master's degree in education, and I got into a graduate level coaching program, and got a credential in evidence-based coaching at Fielding Graduate University in Santa Barbara, which is, it's not exactly an online school, it's a hybrid, but all of the professors are Ivy League professors, blah, 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 blah. And that was a fairly thorough, rigorous program, year-long program. And so I developed some additional coaching skills and some new perspectives. A lot of it was, you know, really inapplicable to what I do, but the part I did get was really worthwhile. Parts about listening and the parts about understanding different approaches to psychology and learning theory and so forth. So, I've made that my business. That's what I do. Some people call me the world's greatest copywriting coach, and I don't object.
Well, I can't say I blame you, and you know, everything I've known about you and heard about you, and especially from people that I've met, and I know Jeannie Levinson pretty well because I've spent mm-hmm. a lot of time with her in conferences, and I've only met her since Jay has passed, but I'm sure she would have nothing but amazing things to say about you. So, you know, so you've done all this stuff and you've, you know, I mean, I applaud you for getting your MBA and, you know, learning about coaching and doing all that stuff. That's something a lot of people wouldn't do. But let's go back to the basics. Okay.
Sure.
You know, I mean, from Ogilvy, you know, and Mather, I mean, I can't remember his first name, but I just know Ogilvy.
David.
Likewise. David. Thank you. So David Ogilvy, you know, was revered years and years ago as one of the greatest copywriters, ad writers, sales writers in history. And you study all of this stuff. And to some of us like me, who I am a, I'm not a writer, even though I've written 4 books. I mean, I just am not good at it. It's not in my genes. I'm an audio guy. I can talk all day long, but I'm just not really, really good at it. What are some of the things, and let's go down to the real basics. If somebody's going to write copy, and there's obviously lots of different copy, there's sales copy, there's web page copy, there's email copy, what are the first things that people really need to wrap their heads around in order to be successful at writing things that persuade?
Well, let me tell you a couple quick stories about Ogilvy, and then I'll answer your question. I think they'll be very, very informative to the question you asked.
Awesome.
Ogilvy started out, like most people, as the new kid, the FNG at some advertising company in London, and this job came in that was too small for a serious copywriter to do. Some poor old nobleman has fallen on hard times, and his country estate was going to be turned in essentially to a bed and breakfast or something, countryman, or something like that, some kind of money-making operation. And he only put £500, which is, what, like $800, into promoting it. And that was way below the level of a real project at the ad agency. So they gave it to this new kid, new guy, Ogilvy. And he's always been very creative and very results-oriented. It's, you know, he was born that way, I guess. And so he thought, well, what can I do? And so he got some color pictures taken of this beautiful estate, and he wrote a letter saying, open to the public for the first time, see, you know, Faded Glory Manor, blah, 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 on this date, you know, hors d'oeuvres and libations will be served, whatever he wrote, something like that. Went there that day. Place was teeming. It was overflowing with people. And he said, I had tasted blood. And carnivore, yeah. That is really what it feels like when you write something, send it out on the internet, put up an ad on Facebook, whatever, and money starts to come in your account. Even though he wasn't getting the money directly, he saw an immense power he had never seen before. So fast forward to his years at Madison Avenue, and I would say about Ogilvie, he is one of the few people in modern advertising history that truly brings a direct response point of view to what he's doing, and I'll explain why that's important.
Okay.
After I give you this quote from him. People talk about creativity and creativity advertising, and they even give these awards for the most creative ad, and it's all bullshit. It's all nonsense, because what is really important is how does it affect a business's sales? That's what advertising is for. Obviously, a strong opinion that not everyone agrees with, mm-hmm. but that's how I look at it. And I don't work with publicly traded companies. I think the rules are different once they go on the stock exchange, and that's a whole other conversation for another millennium or something. But what Ogilvie said is, if it doesn't sell, it's not creative. If it doesn't sell, it's not creative. So, you know, having some highfalutin, clever idea that doesn't add to a company's sales, in his mind, it wasn't creative. And if you look at his ads, they bring this direct response mindset. And this is very important, because most people who aren't already familiar with direct response by using it or having studied it might not even recognize it, except the worst examples. The worst examples being spam and being pop-up ads that you hate.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing for the uninitiated is you will never see good direct response advertising as advertising. It's more like, oh, this is just what I was looking for. In other words, it slips right under the radar when it's done well. It seems more like a friend talking to you, or like an article that you read in a magazine or on a website that's informational. The basics start there. The basics start with that point. And if you don't mind my taking our listeners behind your magic curtain a little bit, it's the same thing you said to me, Brian. It's the same thing you said to me. It's like a conversation. People are just looking over our shoulder, which it feels like to me right now, you know. But copy is a conversation, too. It's a conversation between, ideally, in my mind, in my experience, and by my observations in the most successful cases, between one person who in some way represents or embodies the company or the business that's selling, and the consumer. You're not selling to a market. You're not selling to a crowd. You know, I go nuts when I open up an email and it's not for a group I'm part of, but just like an email that says, hey, you guys, or hey, everyone. I didn't know there were other people around me reading this. I thought it was just me. Are you talking to me? Is there someone else here in the room? You talking to me?
You talking to me?
You talking to me. So, but a lot of people don't get that. So it's a conversation. I mean, have you seen a movie lately that you really liked, that you really enjoyed, you care to mention?
Sully.
Sully, okay. I haven't seen it yet. I want to see that. I think it's going to be a great movie. So I know enough about the movie, I think, so I could do the first part of this. So if I'd seen the movie and I were at Starbucks or Pete's or Denny's or the Four Seasons or wherever I might be, and I was with a friend and I'd just seen the movie and I just was so bursting with enthusiasm, I say, oh man, you gotta see Sully. It's so cool. They tried to destroy this guy for doing the right thing. It's amazing how stupid the people in Washington can be when someone saves lives and brought America's in. And I'm going on and on and on like this, right? Might you not say more or less some of the same things I just said?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it, man.
Yeah, because that's how we talk. Not just Dave and Brian, but we as a human race, that's how we talk when we get excited about something. And so if you, and I'm not talking to you, Brian, I'm talking to the person listening. If you can imagine that you're sitting at a Starbucks or a Denny's or the Four Seasons or Pete's Coffee or wherever with a best friend, and you're enjoying coffee, and you're a little amped up by the caffeine, you're a little excited, and you just saw this movie, and you want to convince your friend to see it for no other reason that you'd like them to have the same great experience that you had. Only reason, you're not going to, you don't have, you know, points of gross. You're not going to benefit, you know, you're not part of Sully's PR team. You just liked the movie. What you would say, at least, maybe not in sequence and format, but in terms of tone and attitude and energy, that's what a direct marketing sales message is. Now, what's the difference between that and, oh, I don't know, Walmart's motto, tagline? Walmart says, lowest prices always, or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's great. But, you know, it's pretty unusual if you were saying, oh, man, I went to Walmart and I got this, I got some new tubes for my amp that I paid only half of what they wanted to charge me at the audio store. Then when I say, lowest prices always, Walmart. No, I wouldn't say that.
No.
I might say, I can always get a good deal there. You know, I might say something like that. And so that's the difference between traditional advertising. Traditional advertising tries to be conversational, but it's almost like they're self-conscious about it, or they want to be cute, you know, to show how clever they are. Whereas with direct response copywriting, you are having this conversation with a lot of enthusiasm and energy in a way that motivates a person to take the action. I mean, think about those two words, direct response. Mm-hmm. Response means when you write a direct response sales message, and you know, I don't care if you know you're writing an infomercial or you have a gardening store and you're writing to the gardeners who come to your store. Ideally, you want to request a response. A response means, it doesn't mean someone raises their hand or shouts out. A response means that they're going to take an action. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people think that this is, you know, sort of like, you know, a gun stuck in someone's rib saying, give me your money. You know, no, first of all, that's absolutely the worst way to ask someone for their money, unless you're a robber. And that's
or,
the way you do it. Yeah.
Or it's Mad Magazine and say, buy this magazine or we'll shoot this dog.
Right, it's like a preposterous exaggeration. It's humor, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But in real life, it's different. But nevertheless, you want to either now. But the action doesn't have to be about money. The action could be, come by our store and take a look at these, you know, fantastic shears we just got in from Norway. You know, they're stainless, they're lighter, and you can actually reach around a shrub and prune it with perfect, I don't know, I'm obviously not a gardener, I don't know what I'm talking about, but you see, you induce someone to take an action. It might be, you know, sign up for the special garden party we're having on Saturday. It's free, but the attendance is limited, and you need to have your name on the list to show up. That's an action you're asking them to take too. Sign up for it and then show up, right? Now, I'm sure you know, as a business owner and as a business expert, that ultimately a business stays in business by making sales. And the way to get sales is to get people to take actions that bring them closer to buying. But sometimes it's awkward and counterproductive to ask them to buy in one fell swoop. Now, when we do in direct marketing, that's what we have called, which we call long-form copy, and other people call that, I can't believe anyone would read anything that long, except they do. Some people read the Bible cover to cover. Some people read, and they may not be the same people, the New York Times cover to cover. some people read websites about something that they'd really like to buy, from top to bottom several times, and then they push a button, they click, and they order. But that wasn't copy. That wasn't one of those long, boring sales letters. That was something I was really interested in.
Right.
Get it? People are going to look at it differently when they're really interested in it and when it's done well. Now, interesting to notice that most people who aren't direct marketing professionals are going to look at five sales letters. They'll look at four of them one way and the fifth one another way.
Sure.
They'll look at the four that they're not interested in, like marketing hype or spam or, lies. And the one they're interested in, they're like, well, this is information I was looking forward to. I'm really glad they put this web page up there. I'm really glad you sent me this email. It's funny. One of the things, okay. So in America, they say, if you're not a celebrity, you're nobody, right? It's almost like that these days, you know? I mean, that could be part of the impetus behind the everybody wins a trophy syndrome.
Right.
You know?
Participant
trophy, right. So everyone can be a celebrity, you know? And so as Americans, we really want to be liked. I mean, we have the Sally Field syndrome, you know? We really do want to think that everyone likes us. And, you know, so we have contests for ads where other advertising professionals like our work. So therefore, if they like our work, it's not too big a stretch to think they like us. Real life doesn't work that way, of course. If you met 100 random people, just being yourself, saying the same thing, some are going to like you, some are going to hate you, and a lot of them are going to be indifferent. Because people are different, and it's really impossible for everyone to like you. But that is what ads go for when they're not direct response ads. They want everyone to like them, so they have very high scores in polls. Unfortunately, being liked and being a good salesperson are not always the same thing. It doesn't mean you have to be an awful antisocial jerk. It means that if you're really going for it, some people are going to like you. Some people will buy from you who don't like you. Some people are really not going to like you, and a lot of people are just not going to be interested. With direct response marketing, if you can get 2 out of 100 people who see your ad to buy, that would be called a 2% conversion rate, you can make a lot of money, and you can make a lot of customers happy. And you're not going to alienate the other 98%. Just because they don't, quote-unquote, like you doesn't mean they hate you. But if you're going for popularity, then this kind of marketing is not going to work. And, see, that is a problem with publicly traded companies. They're not just selling stock. They have the media, and they have securities analysts who issue reports about them. And those people, they will take their advertising into consideration at some level, even if not at a conscious level. Mm-hmm. And if the advertising is offensive, in some way, then that can actually hurt the company's stock price and its sales. And so for them, advertising is as much politics, as much like me politics, as it is a sales device. The kind of advertising I'm talking about, the direct response advertising, it is a sales tool. It is a sales message wrapped in marketing clothing. It does all of the above. So I don't know if that's getting you where you want me to go, but that's some of the basics.
No, it does. I mean, it totally gets me where I want to be, and that's really, I mean, that's perfect for like the first half. We've eaten a lot of time on this, which is great because I want to get into some more stuff. David, man, you have done just an incredible job of laying out all of these pieces, and I so appreciate it. I call them knowledge bombs because, I mean, there's just little, you know, people listen to these podcasts and they pick out little pieces. They go, ooh, that makes sense. Ooh, that makes sense. And you have to listen to them sometimes 3 or 4 times. So this is one I really suggest people listen to it again, and learn some of these techniques. And David, you've really delivered. You've underpromised and overdelivered from where we started. So, man, I really appreciate it. So, people want to get a hold of you. What is the best way for them to do that?
Well, there's a couple ways you could follow me or friend me on Facebook. I'm David Garfinkel, copywriting coach, or David Garfinkel. I check both accounts. Frankly, I still haven't figured out the difference between them.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I repost all my posts on both of them. I write about stuff like this, obviously not in the same depth as we've gone today. I don't have you peeking over my shoulder, but and the other thing is, if I do copy critiques, if you actually have something that's going to make a difference for your business, where there's money at stake and you're doing a launch or you're redoing a sales page for your services, go to Garfinkel Coaching, GARFINKEL coaching.com, and I have a service called Critiques and Consultation. Right? I think it's under critiques, but I can apply a lot of the things we've talked about today to someone's specific situation, help them improve the copy, and we can also talk about strategy and things like that. And those are really the two ways, the website and Facebook.
Awesome. Well, David, man, again, it's been a pleasure. You are somebody that I've, known from afar, and it's so great to get to know you face to face or voice to voice. And again, I really appreciate you bringing so much knowledge to this podcast. That's why I love doing it, because I get to interview some of my heroes, people that I have learned to respect. And man, it's just been a pleasure. I really hope my peeps get as much out of this as I did. So man, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.